Tiki.
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 Battle evil bathroom spirits with bubble genius. Shower with Squeaky Tiki, our massive coconut-scented soap on a rope. Or grace your soap dish with a pipsqueak, a mini tiki in a selection of fruity colors and scents. Have a tiki-rific summer. BubbleGenius.com.
Tiki.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Hi, I'm Clint Webb, and I'm running for Senate. I have a short cropped haircut, a pretty enough yet accessible looking wife, and a newborn baby that I've dressed in a suit to prove to you that I mean business. For the last 15 years, I've lived my life in such a bland, uncontroversial, and repressed manner that it's almost unnatural. Why? Because I've been preparing to be your representative since I was a child. Most well-adjusted, sane men would be hesitant to take a job where their decisions would so drastically affect the lives of so many. But not me. I possess a sort of sociopathic narcissism that makes me think that I should be in charge of everyone. But all of that needs to start here at home, in this beautiful state that I've grown to love since I moved here 18 months ago. Together, we can piggyback some of our state's legitimate needs onto my unquenchable lust for self-glorification. And that's a promise. All of my motives are ulterior. I'm self-involved to the point of psychosis. My soul is terrifying. And that's leadership.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
You can read about it tomorrow, or possibly see it tonight. But with radio, you get it now and get it right.
I find that Duck's opinion of me is very much influenced over whether or not I have bread. A duck loves bread, but he does not have the capability to buy a loaf. The biggest joke on the duck ever. Like, if I worked at a convenience store and a duck came in and grabbed a loaf of bread with his beak and walked out, I let him go. I say, come back tomorrow, bring your friends. You can have the Petrich Farm bread. You know that, Petrich Farm bread. That stuff is fancy, man. It's wrapped twice. You open it and it still ain't open. That's why I don't buy it. I don't need another step between me and toast.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Yeah, it is Thursday, August 9th, 2012. This is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show. I'm Bob, that's Chez. We're brought to you, as always, by BubbleGenius.com. Pure products, pure genius, all vegan, BubbleGenius.com. I was listening to a bunch of Mitch Hedberg as I was driving all up and down the East Coast last week.
Are they doing a documentary on him?
Yeah, there was a short documentary that was posted on YouTube as part of an ongoing series about comic masters or something like that. And yeah. It's a really insightful little piece, with his, His widow, his wife, girlfriend. I'm not sure if they were married or not. I think they were. But she was talking about his process in terms of writing comedy and all the notes he took. He had really funky handwriting, like really cool, almost like a font. They should make that handwriting into a font. But, I mean, he used to write down everything. And, you know, one of his great stand-up jokes was, you know, if he thinks of something funny and his notebook is across the room, he'll sit there and try to think of reasons why it's not funny enough to write down, so he doesn't have to get up and get the notebook. And then I wanted to play that Whitest Kids You Know sketch about the candidate for Senate, because it's so appropriate, especially for what we've been seeing this past week with the Romney campaign and just the ongoing cavalcade of lies and mendacity that we've been seeing from them. And. And then there was a new controversy that started today with regards to an Obama Super PAC ad. I didn't really know about it. I was on the Geraldo Rivera radio show this morning. Oh, this morning, my time.
Hold on, let me pick up that name you just dropped. where they called you Bob Kreska and played a lot of Whitney Houston. Please tell me you're going to use Whitney Houston rejoin music. He seems to have a bizarre obsession with her. Like, he was worshipful.
Yeah.
Like, I reverent.
It was like 20 minutes of commercials.
Followed by Whitney Houston.
Rejoined by Whitney Houston, and then Geraldo basically, like, lapsing into tears over the fact that today, I guess today is Whitney Houston's birthday. I think that's why he was playing it.
Well, not really. I mean, she's dead.
Yeah, she's dead. But, I mean, you know, commemorating Whitney Houston. Geraldo, big, big Whitney fan. I was going to remark about that. I was going to say, like, something, he's wearing, like, the Whitney Houston sweatsuit today in the studio, just in tribute.
Right. He's smoking crack.
Yeah. He's got his hair and that, you know, that
He's doing the he's doing the show from a bathtub in a hotel room.
And Bobby Brown is there. But no, I mean, we were talking about this morning on that show that there was a Super PAC ad, and we're going to get to that in a second. But it's been, you know, I think between Saturday, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, the Mitt Romney lie machine just keeps chugging away. I mean, it's unbelievable. The most recent two occasions, I think, are the most egregious and obvious lies of anything he said, and he said a lot of them. I mean, we talk about all the time how Steve Bannon has been tracking the lies, the Mitt Romney lies, week after week. And there's like 20 or 30 items per week. Meanwhile, the Republicans are losing their spadoinkle over Harry Reid. You've seen this, right?
Yeah.
What do you think? What's your view is on Harry Reid and the tax returns thing? Harry Reid basically said, Mitt Romney hasn't. I have credible evidence that Mitt Romney hasn't paid any taxes for 10 years.
You know, I think it's a crappy thing to say. You know, I've heard people sort of come to his defense and say, well, you know, it's the same thing as a newspaper or media outlet or TV, you know, network saying that, you know, using an anonymous source. But I'm not a big fan of anonymous sources either. But it does sound kind of crappy and offensive coming from a member of Congress, but there's just no way around it that you can't consider the outrage without considering the source. And hearing the Republicans lose their crap over something, you know, Reid pulling this kind of thing is just so hypocritical. Mm-hmm. It's hypocritical to the point of being laughable.
Well, it's one thing that they've been able to latch onto, and then they've gone on to this next.
And it really hasn't benefited them. That's the best part. Yeah, they've been able to beat up on Harry Reid, but all it does is continue the controversy. I mean, it's a win-win for the Democrats.
That's exactly
the more they fight
right.
back, the yeah. more the Democrats win.
Yeah, and that, of course, I mean, Harry Reid might be like Senior Droopy from Guadalupe. I mean, he's really kind of just this, you know, this sad loser kind of droopy character. But he's really politically savvy, and I think
politically savvy. He's a tough fighter when he wants to be. Mm-hmm. And what I do like about him in this little battle back and forth is that yeah, I mean, he's on top of the world now. But background wise, he is the absolute opposite end of the spectrum from Romney. I mean, he came from like nothing.
Yeah, he did, and they both happen to be Mormon, which led. Someone to speculate, I saw that perhaps someone in the Mormon church or something tipped off Harry Reid. I mean, I have no idea. I mean,
did you see the satire piece today that started a really nasty little internet rumor for a while that Anonymous hacked the IRS and had basically released, you know, 20 years of Romney's tax returns?
I didn't see that. Oh, yeah. God, great. Well, you know, and there was another thing. Bernie Goldberg on Fox News Channel was saying, you know, Harry Reid is a pimp and he's, you know, he's hooking out.
Yeah, he never could have outfought Santino.
He's basically got a fleet of prostitutes who work for him.
Okay.
I think that was the joke. And then it's get it. He's got to prove that he's not a pimp.
Right. Right. Of course.
But nevertheless, I mean,
yes, because I remember that when people would turn that, you know, would turn the that argument against Glenn Beck. Remember Glenn Beck killed somebody that whole thing, which was the idea behind it was Beck goes on the air and says these freaking insane things day in and day out,
yeah.
which really is sort of, you know, a microcosm of the way Republicans are in general these days. They've lost their freaking minds, mm-hmm. and they say crazy crap with nothing at all to back it up.
Yeah.
Nothing. And then they expect, well, he's got it. Now you have to defend against it. Mm-hmm. So there's a part of me that, while I think it's wrong, it is a little bit – I hate to say that I'm taking a little bit of getting a little bit of satisfaction, schadenfreude, out of watching it kind of applied against the Republicans for a change.
Absolutely. And again, going back to what we were originally saying about Harry Reid, what he has done is he's calculated that he's going to take a hit on this. I mean, there's no doubt. But he's taken one for the team. And so what this does is it actually keeps Mitt Romney's tax returns front and center, as you said.
Yep.
I mean, that's exactly the calculus behind this. And who knows? He might have evidence. He might be blowing it out his ass. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? But what it does is it gives the press yet additional excuses to keep on this thing with this guy's tax returns, which he's refusing to release. Now,
right.
when I was asked to do that that radio show, it looked like they were preparing to kind of jump all over that and compare it to what I wrote in the Huffington Post about, and also the Daily Banter, about Mitt Romney's lie regarding Ohio early voting law.
Yeah, that was an absolute bunch of crap.
All right. So I saw that kind of coming down Main Street, where it was going to be like, you know, I asked the booker, they sent me an email and said, well, okay, here are the topics. And it was
I was going to say, did they give you a pre?
Yeah, it was like here. It was not a pre-interview, but they gave me the topics. They just sent an email that said, "Okay, we're going to talk about your Huffington Post thing. We're going to talk about Harry Reid and the tax returns." So it's obvious what they were going to try to do, which is, well, if Mitt Romney's lying about early voting in Ohio, and you're up in arms about that, why aren't you condemning Harry Reid? You know, I think that was the tact behind all of that. It turned out that wasn't the subject matter at all.
Right. Yeah. And they got you on the air with Tucker freaking Bowtie Carlson.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to have gone on KABC and exposed that Ohio early voting nonsense, because this is Mitt Romney himself. This is the candidate himself, not Harry, not some outside congressman or senator.
A super PAC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And not a super PAC. This is Mitt Romney taking to Facebook and saying that the president wants to disenfranchise military voters in Ohio. Because the Justice Department is challenging this ridiculous law that says it's okay for military to vote on the weekends, but everyone else can't vote on the weekends. It was originally that everyone could vote for a 5-week period in Ohio in advance of the election. Everybody. Weekday, weekends. The Republicans came in, rolled that back, passed the law, rolling that back to 3 weeks, because they really care about making sure everyone votes, right? And then in a separate law, they eliminated voting on the weekends except for military personnel. And so all the Obama administration, the Obama Justice Department, is saying, we want everyone to be able to vote, including military personnel on the weekends. And they were specific about that. A bunch of military groups, actually opposing what the administration is doing, have been allowed by the Justice Department to participate in order to make sure that if a judge rolls back the law, that he doesn't roll it back for military veterans, too. You see what I mean? He doesn't want to level the playing field so much so that no one gets to vote on the weekends.
Right.
They're all making sure that the law is rolled back and that everyone can vote. So they're making a super sharp effort to get that done. And it has nothing to do with disenfranchising military voters. It's the biggest nonsense. I mean, both Fact Check and PolitiFact both called it nonsense. Both called it nonsense. Meanwhile, they released the Romney campaign itself, not a super PAC, not some sort of outside group. The Romney campaign itself releases a commercial insisting that the president is gutting welfare reform. In fact, what he did was, he's allowing certain groups, and this is through HHS, he's allowing certain states to have a little bit of leeway in terms of how they process welfare recipients through back into the workforce. That's it. That's it. He's not getting it. And there were two Republican governors, one from Nevada and one from Utah, who actually requested it. And then back in 2005, there was a letter signed by 28 Republican governors asking for even more leeway than that. And that letter back in 2005 was signed by Mitt Romney.
Right. But now that it's done, if it's something Obama does, then it's wrong.
That's right.
Well, that's the way it always works.
Yeah. Well, you have two big, massive lies directly from the Romney campaign, in addition to probably the array of other lies that we'll hear about from Steve Bannon at the end of the week, to compose probably that couple of dozen lies that we've been seeing each and every week. So then the Super PAC ad comes out. It's Bill Burton is the chief spokesman for the Super PAC. And the Super PAC, I think it's Priorities USA. And they release an ad that implies that Bain Capital and Mitt Romney
killed somebody.
Were responsible for a woman's cancer death, right? I think I have the ad here. I'm going to play the ad. Where is it here? Oh, here it is. Yeah, here's the button.
I don't think Mitt Romney understands what he's done to people's lives by closing the plant. I don't think he realizes that people's lives completely changed. When Mitt Romney and Bain closed the plant, I lost my health care. And my family lost their health care. And a short time after that, my wife became ill. I don't know how long she was sick. And I think maybe she didn't say anything because she knew that we couldn't afford the insurance. And then one day she became ill, and I took her up to the Jackson County Hospital and admitted her for pneumonia, and that's when they found the cancer. And by then it was stage four. It was there was nothing they could do for her.
So, I mean, you get the idea. Not a very uplifting.
And that's when Mitt Romney snuck into my wife's room and broke her neck in the middle of the night.
I mean, it is a wee bit of a stretch. But
it's certainly a low blow, yeah. But two things. Again, really, are we expecting anything else from politics now? You know how I feel about this. I'm completely beaten down. Yeah. And again, the outrage from Republicans over it is such a bunch of horseshit. It's completely misplaced, and it's completely hypocritical.
Well, the entire point of this is not necessarily Mitt Romney killed my wife. It was that, without the Affordable Care Act, and even in Massachusetts, we'll get to this part in a second. Even in Massachusetts, without Romney Care, if you lose your job and then you get cancer, and you can't, because you have cancer, that's a pre-existing condition, you can't get insurance, you're screwed. You're screwed. Right. And so that's why we talk about all the time where there's a new 9/11 every month due to a lack of health insurance. The same equivalent number that were killed on 9/11 are killed or die every month from a lack of health insurance, affordable health insurance in America.
Yeah, but they don't fall out of 110-story windows.
That's right. We're going to take a short break and be back with a little more on this topic right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
And we're back.
Such a totally underappreciated record. Amazingly good album.
I love this album.
Mechanical Animals is spectacular.
From top to bottom. It was the one with the album cover where he looks really androgynous. He has like...
Yeah, this was his take on Bowie and glam, and it was very good.
Yeah. And this song just kicks all kinds of ass. And he's one of these guys who, because of the gimmicky way he presents himself, isn't given, I think, the respect that he deserves as a songwriter. But anyway, so back to this thing with the Super PAC ad. If you want a solution to all of this, let's just eliminate Super PACs. How about that? Republicans are so bent out of shape over this commercial. I mean, all of talk radio, I mean, Geraldo this morning called it the most important news story in politics right now.
No, it's not.
This Super PAC.
It absolutely is not. But yeah, you're right. I heard you make that comment, and you're correct. You know, if both sides would agree to end Super PACs, then I think it would be nothing but a good thing.
So, I mean, here was Romney went on Bill Bennett's radio show this morning and accused the Obama campaign of shamelessly lying.
Was funny.
Not just about that.
It was tough for me. I actually did laugh out loud at that.
It was...
Really?
Wait, do you hear this quote? I mean, he says, here's Mitt Romney. He says, you know, in the past, when people pointed out that something was inaccurate, why campaigns pulled the ad, they were embarrassed. Today, they just blast ahead. You know,
that's exactly what he does.
He's totally projecting. He's totally projecting.
It's right. It's funny because, you know, Alex Perrine wrote what I thought was actually a pretty good article today calling, you know, and I've supposedly this comparison metaphor has been sort of bandied about a little bit lately, and I haven't heard it, but it's pretty good, saying that lately Mitt Romney's campaign has been the Annie Hall Marshall McLuhan moment. You ever see Annie Hall?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, where he brings in Marshall McLuhan, and Marshall McLuhan says, to this pompous jackass standing in line at the theater, you know, he says, I think you're misinterpreting what it was that I'm trying to say, and you know, just the fact that a lot of the people that Romney has quoted lately have come back and said, well, you're not really, you know, publicly said you're misinterpreting me and you're not understanding what it is that I'm trying to say. But one of the things that that Perrine said is, you know, I put it up as quote of the day over at Deus Ex Malcontent today. He says, Mitt Romney seems to still think that he can simply use the press as a delivery mechanism for his campaign's messages and expect them to be reported relatively uncritically. This explains a lot that at first blush seems odd about his strategy, from why he thinks his refusal to release more tax returns should simply be the end of the issue, to why he doesn't think he should be held accountable for previously stated political positions, to why he doesn't expect backlash when his campaign produces blatantly dishonest attack ads. Yeah. The press has evolved, thank God, since 2000. They're now willing and able to produce Marshall McLuhan when his name comes up. And it's a great quote. And I think that it's interesting because that was the first thing I thought of when I heard that quote from Romney talking on Bill Bennett's show this morning, is it seems like he's just not getting the fact that the press can call him out on it, but I just don't think he cares. I don't think he gives a crap. I think his attitude is, look, I'm just, you know, it doesn't matter whether they call me on it. It doesn't matter whether they produce Marshall McLuhan or whether they, you know, they expose my mendacity, because as you're always so fond of saying, you know, the thing about a lie traveling halfway around the world before the truth gets its shoes on.
Yeah.
Well, you know, once it's out there, it's out there. That's all that matters.
And he keeps going and going and going. And exactly. That's the cynicism about it, because he knows he's not. It's not going to really negatively impact him. The more important thing, the calculus here, is that the way the lie infiltrates into the heads of the base is a lot more beneficial than the potential downside of being called out on the lie.
That's very true. But I am wondering if enough people do say, "Look, this is wrong. No, 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 no. You know, this is BS," and it gets enough play. If as a whole, his candidacy will sort of suffer if it will be exposed. Because, yeah, look, you can play to the base, and the base will believe anything. The base will believe any my God, birtherism, yeah. You know, crazy Jerome Corsi conspiracy theories. The Republican base will believe any bit of anti-Obama nonsense you put in front of them, no matter how freaking crazy it is.
That's right.
But the question is, you know, so Romney can say whatever the hell he wants, and the minute he says it, you know, Barack Obama's a communist space alien. You know, these people will take that to the voting booths with them in November, and they will circulate it to all their friends via email.
Right, right. And to wit here, I mean, I just got this email. This is a guy responding to – a guy writing in from Tampa, Florida, responding to my Huffington Post / Daily Banter piece about the Ohio early voting.
Says, just, hey, Tampa, say no more.
Yeah, Tampa. Hey, Bob, Romney lie? Get real. You support the liar in chief. When you look up the word liar, the source says CBHO.
Right.
This guy has lied his whole life, spent $4 million to hide his birth certificate, high school, Social Security, selective service, passport, college thesis, law records, for Christ's sake. Come on, you got to do better than that for the HuffPost readers out there. I mean, so this is a great example, anecdotal, but still, I think it proves something.
No, it does, because, you know, I trust me, I get it. You know, I there's a guy who's one of my Facebook friends. He's a guy that I went to high school with years ago, and I wasn't really great friends with him in high school. He was nice enough. Mm. But, you know, he's a Republican, and he always loves to come on my Facebook page and argue with me about whatever the hell. And it's, you know, whenever I post something that's political. But the interesting thing is that I don't like to debate him, and the reason why is because he is so set in his ways. He so firmly believes what he believes. And I read, you know, some of the stuff that he circulates, and I'm just like, I'm not – the stuff that is my opinion, and it will go against his opinion. And that's fine. Two people whose opinions will not meet. And that's cool. He's entitled to that. But he's, I mean, you know, he takes quotes out of context. He makes up crap. And it just, and I realize that I'm never going to be able to get through to that. So why bother? It's, you know.
Well, I want to talk too about what you wrote this week about tribalism, and we'll get to that in another segment. But Romney continued here, and this is another layer to all of it. This adds the fact check layer. This is something. I mean, it's remarkable that he said this. It's almost as like he's reading our stuff. He's reading Alex Perrine. He's reading Ed Kilgore. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. I want to mention this Ed Kilgore quote before I go any further with Romney. But he says, Ed Kilgore wrote this week, "I swear, trying to engage these people in any sort of reasoned discourse is like looking into the eyes of a goat. Nothing there but the determination to keep on keeping on. Truth be damned. Team Mitt has a lot riding on this latest effort to tar," racial allusion intended, "the president with the, quote, welfare meme, which unsubtly links repeated GOP claims that Obama is a wild-eyed socialist redistributor of wealth to the least popular and most racially explosive programmatic element of the New Deal Great Society legacy. The welfare ad is going to be in heavy rotation, according to Romney campaign sources, and no number of refutations of its central claims will stop them." They keep plowing forward. And if you present, and both fact-check organizations, factcheck.org, PolitiFact, they've both entirely debunked both of these things. Not only the Ohio early voting, but then also the welfare reform bit. Totally debunked both of them, right? But still, Romney says, you know, the various fact-checkers look at some of these charges in the Obama ads, and they say that they're wrong and inaccurate, and yet he keeps on running them. He's, you know, so he's like, it's like he's reading Ed Kilgore and Alex Perrine and you and me and Huffington Post and the Daily Banter. And he's just like repeating that and projecting it back onto everybody else.
He just, I mean, he doesn't care. The campaign doesn't care.
Doesn't care.
I think that for independents, the only thing that's going to stand in the way of Obama, and obviously I think the Republicans know this, Romney certainly knows this, is the economy.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much it. Nothing else that they've tried to stick to him has really worked.
Well, so that's what that's why they're playing to the base so much. They think that
right.
the
just
independent
throwing
voters
out whatever. Here it is. We'll just any kind of red meat we can find.
Right. The independent voters will vote based on the health or lack of health of the economy, and the base will come out and augment that if they get riled up.
Did you see what the hell was it? What poll was it that basically said that Romney is like the most unfavorable candidate or something like that?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's the least popular Republican candidate ever. I just don't see him well-liked by the base. I mean, even Eric Erickson and those guys just are just ripping him left and right. And
I mean, while you were on vacation last week, I took up your mantle. You know that I generally don't like to write just specifically about politics, and I probably should more, but I just don't. I feel like it's the market is kind of saturated on that, and I feel like other people, you included, by the way, often say the things that I want to say, so I just don't feel like repeating. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you know, I wrote after his just hellacious trip abroad, where it was just one horrible thing he did and said after another. You know, I wrote something basically saying, like, you know, it just, I think I called it like the god awful presidential candidacy of Mitt Romney. And I said, I'm like, you just, no matter how diehard a Republican you are, you don't like this guy. There's no way in hell you can like him. He is a terrible, terrible presidential candidate.
Yes,
he may, you know, for all I know, he may actually, you know, if it winds up happening, he may be a good president. Who the hell knows? I'm just saying, as a candidate, he is a terrible, terrible candidate. For this time in our nation's history, for everything he is and everything he represents, for the way he conducts himself, for the people he surrounded himself with, he couldn't be a worse candidate.
That's what Tucker Carlson said this morning on that show. He said, you know, this is he's been covering politics since 1992 or whatever it was, and he's never seen a campaign this amateurish. It's like he referred to it as amateur hour, and he called them a bunch of children. This is right wing. Tucker Carlson about the Romney campaign.
Yeah, that's. I actually used the word amateur in my piece. I said I called it amateurish and Bush League, which, you know, no pun intended. Or actually probably pun intended.
We're going to take a break for Bubble Genius back after this. Oh, yeah. It's that time of year where everyone stinks from the sweaty heat. the East Coast of the United States, I swear to God, it's just like, it's just a blaze. It's like a level of Dante's hell. So, I mean, you really do need some really good bath and body products to keep yourself clean as the rest of the world erupts in flame.
It is, what, 103 in the valley?
It's insane. I landed at Reagan National Airport, and it was 96 degrees outside. It wasn't 96 during my layover in Phoenix, and it wasn't 96 when I took off from Hawaii.
Yeah, it was 100. It was 101 degrees here at about 7 o'clock the other night, 7 p.m. in the valley. I live in the valley. I live in Sherman Oaks.
Here now is the latest word from Bubble Genius.
Tiki!
Tiki!
Battle evil bathroom spirits with Bubble Genius. Shower with Squeaky Tiki, our massive coconut-scented soap on a rope. Or grace your soap dish with a Pipsqueak, a mini tiki in a selection of fruity colors and scents. Have a tiki-rific summer. BubbleGenius.com.
Tiki.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Oh, I missed that. I missed all this stuff. A week I was away. I really had a good time being away, but I really missed the show. For some reason, I got inexplicably hyper at about 3:30 in the afternoon last Thursday. Make sure to enter your promo code, Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, for 15% off your entire order from BubbleGenius.com. So the saga continued to get crazier about all of this because there's this super PAC ad that was released by Priorities USA, which is a pro-Obama super PAC. Had nothing to do with the campaign. This is a separate group, which, hell, if we can overturn the Supreme Court ruling on Citizens United, maybe we can get rid of this. But the conservatives love Citizens United. They love it. Give corporate, corporate cash. It's speech. Corporations are people. And then yet they're complaining about the unaccountable super PACs. Well, too effing bad. So this super PAC ad gets released, and the Romney campaign sends out one of its advisors, Andrea Saul, and she appears on television and notes that, well, she says this: to that point, if people had been in Massachusetts under Governor Romney's health care plan, they would have had health care. So basically, like, if this woman and her family had been covered under Mitt Romney's health care reform legislation in Massachusetts, you know, they may have had coverage to prevent this woman's cancer.
Right.
Or at least they would have had health care to pay for whatever treatment she received. So, good job. Good job. Then, you know, that's what prompted Eric Erickson to tweet, OMG, this might just be the moment Mitt Romney loses the election.
I don't think that'll be the moment, but, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, so all she did really was tell the truth.
Right.
And it just,
yeah,
it,
exactly. That's a good point, though. You're right. She tells the truth, and that's when he's going to lose the election.
You know, all she's doing is talking about something that Mitt Romney did. His biggest success as governor of Massachusetts was that health care reform legislation that he signed. And they don't want to mention it, but everyone knows about it. You know, it's just, it kind of just highlights how kerfuffled the entire campaign is. How they just can't, they don't know which direction to take. Because, you know, they're kind of trapped between what Romney's actual record was and pandering to the Tea Party base.
Yep.
So they go one direction, they get screwed. They go the other direction, they get screwed. You know. There you go. I mean, we're down this rabbit hole of lies and twisted logic and, you know, false equivalences, because now just one super PAC ad or one Harry Reid statement basically means that the Obama campaign is lying up and down just as often as the Romney campaign is.
Hmm.
And so, you know, I, honest to God, I really believe now he's not supposed to do this. So it's not, it would not ever be announced because he runs a super PAC. But I believe Karl Rove has got to have his hands in the Romney campaign because they are just, they're at the point now of being so Orwellian. It just reminds me of the previous 8 years where up is down, black is white, you know, healthy forest initiative means burning them down. You know, the whole
the clean, double plus good.
Yeah.
No, I get you. But the one thing you could say about Rove is that at least he was savvy. And yeah. It really seems like nobody in the Romney campaign is.
Yeah, they're just fumbling their way through. We're going to take one last break and come back right after this.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show with Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
And we're back. I have one more segment to go on the show this week. It feels good to be back. I feel a little bit rusty. I mean, it's weird. You miss one show and you kind of forget where all the buttons are. And you vaguely forget how to form a complete sentence, but... So, Newt Gingrich, just as to wrap up all of this, Newt Gingrich is back into the fray.
And, thank God.
And he's obviously campaigning to become vice president, or the vice presidential nominee. He was all over the welfare reform thing.
Right, welfare queens.
Welfare queens, yeah. I mean, anytime welfare is brought up, he's got to go down that road and highlight that, you know, just play the Southern strategy. You know, again, that welfare thing was... obscene how inaccurate that commercial was. They basically say they're gutting welfare, but they're not. They're just doing what the Republicans and it's just like this keeps happening where the president will be the grown-up in the room and kind of acquiesce or give a little bit of leeway to a Republican idea, and then what do? They crap all over him for it. They crap all over him for it. That's what it was. 28 of these guys signed a letter in 2005 wanting all this leeway for the state governments, including Mitt Romney, including Rick Perry. So he does it for two states, Utah and Nevada, and they crap all over him. It happens time and time again. It was like the that great cartoon about the Affordable Care Act ruling and John Roberts. A Republican Chief Justice... who's nominated by a Republican president, releases a decision that supports a Republican idea, and the Republicans are angry about it.
Yeah, and they call him traitor.
So, and then meanwhile, oh God, Newt Gingrich was also playing the McCarthyism card, where he was actually kind of implied that Huma Abedin.
There's nothing kind of about it. It's always fun. That's a sort of revisionist history that we've seen quite a bit lately. The desire to kind of – and it really is – I'd like to say it's only the most crazy of the bunch that do it, but I get the impression really it feels like it's more and more people who are trying to sort of now whitewash McCarthy's image and make it seem like, no, you know what? He was a good guy with some good ideas, and he's been unfairly tarnished by, you know, years of liberal piling on.
He was laughed out of Congress and basically had to resign in disgrace and then died a couple of years later of alcoholism, you know, and also represents and will always represent. I don't care what Newt Gingrich says. Joe McCarthy will always represent one of the darkest chapters in American politics.
Agreed.
And here was Newt Gingrich with Wolf Blitzer saying that, he's getting a bum rap. He weeded out a lot of communists out of Hollywood and
thank God, the
State Department. And so, you know, and then Wolf Blitzer there is just trying to say, well, look, God, there were so many innocent people whose lives were ruined. Ruined by Joe McCarthy. Like, well, you know, it's all this, oh, that's, you know, that's just nonsense here.
You know, that seems to be a sort of prevailing Republican philosophy, a way to sort of separate the sort of hardline conservatives from everyone else. Hardline conservatives are all about making sure that the guilty suffer, even if the innocent suffer as well. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. Yeah. You know, there are some people who game the welfare system, so therefore, screw welfare. You know, McCarthy, you know, hurt a ton of innocent people, but maybe you know, at best, he weeded out a communist or two.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. That's all right. You know, it doesn't matter whether Texas executes one or two innocent people as long as they're killing a bunch of guilty people. And I think the other side of the equation is, and what I think is the more humane way of looking at it, is that, you know, if the innocent suffer, then no, it's not worth it. You know, if you stop people from gaming the welfare system, those handful of people who are, but, you know, the kid up the street doesn't get isn't able to eat, he and his family can't eat,
that's right.
Then you're screwing people over and you're wrong and what you're doing is immoral.
Well, that's the American way. You know, one guy tries to light his underpants on fire and suddenly we've got nuclear radiation body scanner machines.
Exactly, yes.
And then a guy tries to light his shoe on fire and we got to take our shoes off at the airport.
We are constantly hitting flies with sledgehammers.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And it just goes on and on and on. And so, but I mean, if you look back at the last century or so of political accomplishments, you can do a long list of liberal accomplishments in the federal government. And boy, you don't have many things to list on the conservative side. Conservative column, you got maybe, I don't know. I don't even know if there's a couple of things. But, I mean, that would, I guess, lead them to try to whitewash something like the Joe McCarthy Red Scare era as being a successful conservative plan. Like, boy, you are really digging down deep. Scraping the bottom of the barrel on this one. If you're digging up McCarthy and trying to say, well, you know, Joe McCarthy was misunderstood. He's a misunderstood, beautiful genius, was he. You know, because of all that,
everybody's got a mother who loves them.
And the witch hunts were wonderful. And you know, when we slaughtered all those Indians, my God, those were the days. Those were the days. This is all this revisionist history about how we gave malaria and smallpox to the Indians, and kicked them out of their lands, and you know, put Starbucks.
We gave
in.
Them those nice reservations.
So Newt Gingrich was saying that Huma Abedin, you know, the Hillary
Clinton.
Oh, yeah,
I did hear that he went down that road.
He did. He implied that Huma Abedin was at least partly responsible for the alleged leeway that the State Department is giving the Muslim Brotherhood.
It's astonishing. It's beyond shameless. You know, I know you and I, at some point in our history on this show, I've brought that up, the word shameless. Yeah. That it's, for me, it's an almost overused term now, because the lack of shame, the lack of shame in saying anything disgusting and despicable is just staggering to me.
Well, and it just and all it does is it adds fuel to the fire, and that as much as anything else is, again, it's not directly a racial dog whistle, but it's a dog whistle still to the fanatical, gun-toting, right-wing reactionaries.
By the way, in proving Poe's law, the idea that satire of fundamentalism is indistinguishable from actual fundamentalism, I will cop to something right here, sort of on this subject. I assume, did you see the Onion report on the Onion story on Michelle Bachmann saying that it could have the shooting in Milwaukee at the Sikh temple could have been much worse. Thank God no Americans were killed. Did you see that?
Yeah. Ashby posted that.
Guess what? When I first saw the headline for that without seeing where it was from, I absolutely believed it. I 100% believe that she said that.
Oh, yeah.
And then I clicked, you know, I clicked to it first, and then it took me a second, and then it's, you know, I realized, okay, it's the Onion. But, yeah, for just a minute, I was like, I can't believe it, but I can absolutely believe it.
Yeah.
I could totally hear her saying something like that.
There have been numerous videos that have popped up on YouTube of people being like wingnuts being interviewed on the street and so forth. And they say, you know, someone's asked them, you know, is do you believe the president is a Muslim? And they say, yeah, we don't think he's an American. So it's like somehow the idea, the notion of being a Muslim is in conflict with the notion of being an American.
Exactly.
This is very serious Newt Gingrich. This is the wise old man, the insider.
Yeah, he's the thinking man. He's the Rosetta Stone of smarts in that freaking party.
Right. He's the guy who's the historian and author. I think he's also I think paleontologist is in there too. I'm not making that up. I think that was one of his. But you know what he's doing now, obviously, is he's jockeying to be sort of a Cheney meets Palin kind of vice presidential nominee, a guy who can hurl red meat into the crowd with this kind of McCarthyism and welfare queen race baiting, and then at the same time be the wise old man pulling the strings behind the scenes.
Yeah, but man, if Romney were to pick him as vice president, the first thing I would do among my cabinet would be hire someone to taste my food like the old kings used to. Because you know Gingrich is going to try to figure out some way to bump him off.
So your theory is that Gingrich, if nominated for the vice presidency, will actually try to kill Mitt Romney.
I think so, yeah. I have, in classic Harry Reid fashion, I have an anonymous source that's told me that.
Okay.
I have nothing to go by but that anonymous source, but I believe him.
That's great. You know what I want to talk about is this. You wrote a piece this week about, I think the headline was We're Not Americans Anymore, and it was about tribalism. And you seem to be sort of taking the approach that you had it.
I've done that a lot, though. Mm. I mean, I'm not kidding. One of the reasons why I don't write as much about politics, I mean, you've read my stuff. You know that like 4 years ago during the election, during the lead up, the campaign, I was all over the place. I mean, I was a machine. I cranked out. Now, obviously, I have a lot more work to do now. And it means that I don't blog as much as I used to. And I also write a lot for the Daily Banter, which means that, the output, the sort of quick, bite type output that I used to put up on the blog during the campaign season 4 years ago, I don't really have the opportunity to do that anymore. But the other thing is that, I've expressed more than once, many times, in fact, my sort of frustration and almost depression with how bad things are when it comes to politics in this country. So, that piece was absolutely an expression of again of that frustration.
Yeah. I mean, today I brought up on that show, I said, well, it seems like we all agree with the idea that corporate money, unlimited corporate money injected into the political discourse is a bad thing. It's unaccountable. Who knows who's responsible for it? And it's out there. And so the entire campaign essentially rotates around trying to knock those things down.
Yeah.
While also, on the other hand, being partly responsible for creating them.
Yeah. No, I agree. I do. It's my frustration. What led me to write the piece that I did for Banter. Was, and this is something that I've, I said it in the piece, this is something that I've thought about quite a bit over the past, sort of, like, I think the way I put it was, it's kind of been bubbling underneath my consciousness for quite a while, and I haven't really wanted to admit it to myself, but I think that if we were, and I think that this is one of the most depressing things I could possibly say, I think that if we were attacked again tomorrow morning, if we had another 9/11, I don't think that we would see a sort of unifying that we saw after 9/11. No. I really don't. No. I think that I don't think it would cut through the politics the way it did last time. I think that you would find people on the right immediately blaming Obama's policies. I think you would find people on the left immediately blaming, rhetoric or something like that. I mean, regardless, I think that we're so split that I just don't. And that's what sort of the sad part of it was. I can't imagine any one event short of us being invaded by aliens. That would bring us together, that would actually unify this country, that would make us join together in nationalistic solidarity, because everything is politicized now.
But maybe I'm actually contributing to the problem by saying this, but who exactly then would be responsible for that lack of unity after a hypothetical second 9/11 on Barack Obama's watch?
It
would absolutely be the right.
Absolutely, because they would, I remember, look, hey, you know what? I wasn't a huge George Bush fan, no doubt about it. But after 9/11, that bastard was my president.
Well, so I guess,
you know, he was my president, and you know what? We got attacked, and I was right there beside him. I rallied around him. You know, I knew that there was the possibility that if we fought back, it could very quickly go off the rails. But at that moment, and for quite a while, you know, he had the benefit of the doubt with me because, mm-hmm. yeah, you know, I mean, and I didn't play any kind of politics with it. I just didn't. And I was actually, you know, I'm sure Greenwald wouldn't like to hear this, but yeah, I, you know, once again, lots of leeway, and yeah, I got patriotic, and I was like, you know what? Screw that, man. You know, I'm sure that we have done things. I know our foreign policy probably helped to contribute to this, but it does not excuse what happened. And I'm there with, you know, with our people. I'm an American.
So who's then really tribal? Because what I'm failing to see is whether or not it's a problem with the entire system or if it's a problem with one faction of the system.
I think it is absolutely. Look, I mean, that's the crappy thing is, you know.
And that's why I say maybe I'm contributing to the problem by saying that.
I do think that I really think it's more the right these days. I think that they hate Obama so much with such the fire of a thousand suns that they will give him nothing, nothing under any circumstances. Yeah. And no matter how bad, you know, no matter how horrific something happened to this country that should unify us, mm-hmm. no matter how awful it was, I really don't think that even then he would get the benefit of you know, American unity.
Of course not. And I still believe that 11 years ago next month, that Al Gore would have been impeached after 9/11. I don't think the Republicans would have given Al Gore an inch. The charitable feelings we had towards George W. Bush in those days after 9/11 on the Democratic liberal side would never have been reciprocated by the Republicans and the conservatives, by and large.
That's, you know what, that's honestly, that is a point, and believe me, it is something I thought about. You know, I mean, one of the reasons why we saw party unity could very well be because there was a Republican in the White House, and that's just sort of expected. And the right, you know, calms down and they revel in the American unity. You know, and they milk it for all it's worth. Yeah. Whereas, yeah, if there was a Democrat in office, who knows?
Yeah,
I'd like to believe so badly that that something could happen to us that makes us Americans, not Democrat, not Republican, just Americans.
Yeah.
But I genuinely don't think that's possible anymore.
Yeah.
And I do think it comes more from the right.
Yeah,
I really do.
Well, you saw it when
and by the way, I wonder if that makes me a tribalist for saying that. But something that I've maintained for a really long time, especially with people who say, "Oh, well, you're liberal, you're progressive, you're this, you're that," and I'm like, "No, you don't get it. I don't look at Republicans or conservatives as being, you know, wrong and crazy because I am on the left. I am, you know, that's not it at all. The fact that they went completely crazy is what has made me say, you know, it's the other way around, is what has made me say, look, I can't be a part of that anymore. Because I've had conservative principles. There are certain things that I'm actually quite conservative about, but I can't join what they're doing now, what they've been for the past, God, certainly the past 3.5 years, and, you know, definitely for the past maybe 20 years.
Well,
I can't be on board for it.
It's written into the conservative DNA, I believe, that winning is the only thing.
Is power for power's sake.
You do exactly. You do anything you can to win. I mean, it goes back to this Patton speech from the movie Patton.
Americans love a winner and will not tolerate a loser.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Americans play to win all the time. I wouldn't give a hoot in hell for a man who lost
and laughed. Love it. Mm-hmm.
That's why Americans have never lost and will never lose a war. Because the very thought of losing is hateful to Americans.
Right. Well, this, of course, that partly
speech
applies to Americans in general, but I think in a political sense, in an ideological sense, it has everything to do with conservatives, the modern conservative movement, where they will, and we're seeing it with the Romney campaign, we're seeing it with the Tea Party. No contradiction is too over the top. No lie is too big. Whatever it takes to win, they will do anything, say anything, smear anyone in the process, whether it's Huma Abedin or Barack Obama, on down the list.
I do think that, yeah.
Black people, Muslims, anyone they can. And as long as it means winning. If they can win, impeach Al Gore in a hypothetical 9/11 on Al Gore's watch, or impeach Barack Obama in a hypothetical 9/11 on his watch. Because what that'll do is that will help them win.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's frustrating, and it feels like we're engaged in an exercise of futility. But, you know, I think it's just important to keep at it and not get overly discouraged, even though it's very, very easy to do so. I mean, I really felt different when I got back from my week of not blogging. I mean, I felt recharged, and I only then realized how worn down I was from doing it perpetually since, God, going all the way back to 2004. So I was really glad to have the opportunity to refuel, but I think it was totally necessary.
Had you really not taken a freaking break since you started that thing?
Well, I hadn't taken a break from blogging for a week, maybe for a couple of days, but never for a week, not since I really started doing the blog seriously in 2007. I started the blog in 2004, then segued over to the Huffington Post, and then relaunched the blog in 2007, and I've been doing it consistently ever since then. Without a break. Really, really needed that one.
Yeah, sounds like it.
So we're back. I think we're back for the long haul, certainly through the election. Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely. After Party is next. Or no, tomorrow. Next? Hell, tomorrow. Take care, everybody.
See ya.